Hello and welcome to Unabashed Book Snobbery, the podcast where we gush about George R. R. Martin's The Song of Ice and Fire and complain about its terrible adaptation, Game of Thrones.
This is where being a book snob is a good thing.
Why do critics give this show a pass?
That theme song you just heard is the Book Snob Sing Along by the Metronomes.
We're going to miss it
so much.
It's clearly the best part of this podcast.
My name is Kylie, and here with me is Julia.
Hello, I'm very excited.
Caroline.
Hi, everyone.
And joining us, coming back as a UBS guest, is Gretchen.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. The four of us write for thefundamentals.com, and I hear tell it's the website for fundamentally sound fandom analysis.
No, really. How exciting. How brave. How brave of us.
This is
how
us before shocking. We do our shot, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Was I not supposed to start drinking already?
Oh. I've already been drinking too, Caroline. It's fine.
Yes.
Why are we drinking? Well, this is a podcast that is devoted to Game of Thrones critiques. We have not been fans of the show for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
We analyze it a lot on said website. And it's over. It's over.
It's over!
Ding dong, the witch is dead. Witch, old witch, the wicked witch.
So the final episode called The Iron Throne, because that's really what it was about in the end.
Mm. I mean, it's better than the title that we thought it was going to have, so...
Oh, I'm not rage-filled. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah. It's like the only title this season that makes any kind of sense. So.
That's true.
It's better than The Long Night that was actually just like a really long hour.
Hey, it was at least 2 hours. Come on now. It was like sort of dawn when... Yeah, it was dawn when Mel, you know, took off her necklace and died.
For reasons.
She was done. Now, if you want to read something that does make sense, I recommend you go to thefundamentals.com and check out our Game of Thrones coverage, along with the other articles that we post about other geeky media, because we're just chock full of takes.
We're like, HBO, please stay with us when Game of Thrones is over, please.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. Also, if you want to show your support for us, especially
even
in
though Game of Thrones is over,
especially in a dire time of need, then you might want to consider becoming a Fundamentals Plus subscriber for $3 a month or $30 a year, which I hear is not very much more than a cup of coffee.
Yeah. I mean, it's less than jalapeno poppers.
Yeah, I mean, the $30 is like a couple bags of beans, but still. We would greatly appreciate it. Also, Game of Thrones may be over, but our coverage of it and our analysis of it certainly isn't. Nope. We still have to update the Book Snob Glossary. I have to somehow write a piece on the sexism in season 8. I'm not sure I noticed any. Did you guys?
I mean, I think it's just one of the major themes that season 8 gave us.
And then Julia and I are going to be doing our retrospective series where we go and somehow rewatch this plotline by plotline. Whatever.
I'm so excited for that.
We still haven't figured out structure-wise how we're going to do that, because there's not really distinct plot lines, like kind of maybe.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for you to discuss the super meaningful Euron's arc. How deep and meaningful Euron's story was.
It's extremely meaningful.
What a waste of a character. And I don't even like that character in any media.
but he is the man who killed Jaime Lannister.
He is the storm.
Jaime was fine afterwards because apparently this is what I heard on the grapevine. I think I heard it from you, Caroline. Or from Yana. I don't remember.
It was from Blair.
Oh, it was from Blair. Yeah. Well, somebody very nicely told me that apparently the directors D&D realized at some point that both of the actors were Danish and it would be super hilarious to have two Danes fight each other. So they threw that scene together at the last minute. Yeah, this is an unconfirmed rumor, but it's so hilarious that I choose to believe it.
It's so stupid. It would explain
why Jaime didn't seem to have been very affected by
it's so stupid, that. It could very easily be true.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, these are the people...
They wanted the hot Dane-on-Dane action.
Right? Like, that. Yeah, that is the level of thinking I can imagine going into that scene.
Now, speaking of level of thinking, a lot of our very smart listeners have realized that they don't actually want to watch Game of Thrones at all. So we have decided to outsource the episode recaps to Shiro Shinobi, a Legend of Korra character.
Yeah, he'll just whore himself out for anything.
For reasons. So talk you through the events of the final episode of Game of Thrones. So
take it away, Shiro.
This week for the last week on Game of Thrones, everyone is reeling from Mad Queen Daenerys having burnt literally everything down. Tyrion takes 10 fucking minutes to walk sadly through the rubble before wandering below the keep where he uncovers the weirdly intact bodies of his brother and sister. Oh, cruel fates, if only the OTP had moved 6 feet to the left. Jon sees Grey Worm about to kill some Lannister prisoners and tries to stop him, but Grey Worm insists he's following his queen's orders. Speaking of that queen, she arrives with some very subtle dragon wing imagery and delivers an impassioned speech on how her now many Dothraki and Unsullied, and how she plans on, you know, taking over the world!
Of course!
Because she did so well at freeing the people of King's Landing by burning them all down! What is this?
She freed them from this mortal coil.
At the end of her speech, she accuses Tyrion of treason for having freed Jaime, but he throws his hand pin away since, you know, she slaughtered the city, so maybe call it a wash. I'd say he had the upper hand in that one. He's still arrested by the Unsullied. Arya pops up by Jon's side to tell him that Dany's a killer. Thanks, Arya! Couldn't have passed that one out otherwise! Still confusingly conflicted, Jon goes to talk to Tyrion. He seems to feel everything's fine and dandy now that the war is over, but Tyrion points out how Dany didn't exactly seem done with that whole fire and blood shtick. You know, because of the world domination? He then points out that why would she do anything other than fire and blood, since every time she enacted violence before, it was met with cheers. Benioff and Weiss, you don't have to be so obvious in critiquing your own writing, you know. Mystifyingly, the two men bond over loving Dany, and Tyrion urges him to kill her, since as a Targ himself, Jon will always be a threat to her. Jon finds Dany by the Iron Throne and tries to argue with her about the whole mass murder thing. Dany insists that she did what she had to do, and now they can finally build a good world because she clearly has an unshakable idea of right and wrong. Together they will break the wheel, whatever the wheel is! Jon pretends he agrees and pulls her into a kiss before stabbing her. No, Kylo Ren, why? Drogon appears and finds her dead with Jon standing right there and decides to melt the Iron Throne down for reasons before picking up Dany in his talons and fucking off. Some incredibly indeterminate amount of time later, Tyrion is brought out to the Dragon Pit by Grey Worm, where there is a council assembled to determine his fate. This council includes the formerly missing Edmure Tully, Robin Arryn, who has certainly been drinking his milk, some unnamed Prince of Dorne in a bathrobe, Sansa, Arya, Bran, Brienne, Lord Royce and his giant breastplate, Gendry, Sam Tarly, and Davos, for reasons. Sansa asks for Jon to be released and Grey Worm refuses. Good thing he softened on that whole execute all prisoners policy. Tyrion points out that it's not exactly his call, is it? Because the council will totally elect a new king who will decide. Then, for more reasons, Tyrion names Bran the ideal candidate for king since his life has had the best story. Sansa points out that A, he doesn't want to rule, and B, he cannot father children, but apparently this is the wheel that Dany always wanted to break. It ensures future monarchs will only be selected by a small, elite, and arbitrary group of ruling families. That'll help the masses! Everyone agrees to King Bran, though Sansa declares the Northern independent, because a lot of them died or something. Anyone else want to pipe up? Yara, Dornish Prince, anyone? Bran names Tyrion his hand, which is apparently a good decision because Tyrion doesn't want to be it. If there's one thing Robert Baratheon taught us, it's that disinterested rulers are ideal. Tyrion decides Jon should go to the Night's Watch, which exists again for reasons.
It's Australia.
A compromise because Grey Worm wanting him dead and Sansa wanting him not dead means they have to meet somewhere in the middle. You know, exile in a penal colony. Then Grey Worm takes the rest of the Unsullied to Narth since he's heard really great things about those butterflies.
Oh, gosh.
Jon says his goodbyes to his siblings, but so does Arya since she's off to find what's west of Westeros.
The Resteros.
Oh, my God.
Brienne is made Lord Commander of Bran's Kingsguard and writes nice things about Jaime in the White Book. Davos is made Master of Ship. Sam Tarly is now suddenly the great Grand Maester. Wait, doesn't the Night's Watch still exist? What about Gilly and her child? And Bronn is the Master of Coin for reasons. And Bronn ruled wisely until the end of his days, ignoring Tyrion's brothel jokes. Finally, Sansa's named Queen of the North, Arya set sail to explore, and Jon fucks off from the Night's Watch for a second time, heading to the true North with Tormund, Ghost, and the Wildlings. And thus ends Game of Thrones, a tale certainly full of sound and fury. What does it signify? We must discuss now, because there's no more show to watch ever again.
Yay.
It's
Thank
over!
You for your service, Shiro.
Thank you, Shiro. You have served well.
Wow, so that recap
now your watch has ended.
That recap reminded me how furious I am at everything.
Right?
And, I don't even know where to start.
I didn't want to write like four or five reasons, but then things just kept happening.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
I mean, I will say I really like Arya's new hairdo.
It's just a slightly tighter bun.
Yeah, that's the hairdo that I wear when my hair is like being especially poofy.
Yeah, it's good. It reminds me of how I go running.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, if someone who was not D&D decided to make an Arya Pirate Queen spinoff about her adventures, I would watch it. Like,
I would watch it.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Would she have a personality in that one, though?
I mean, she magically got...
How much would she want to kill her sister?
She magically got a personality. She magically healed off screen at the end of, you know, between season 7 and 8. So she probably would have a personality.
That's true. She was, like, emoting. She just also would then deadpan for trailer lines and stuff.
Yeah.
But, oh my god, why was she in King's Landing at all? Just so she could pop up and tell Jon, hey, Dany's a killer?
Okay, what I want to know is where the fuck her horse went. They had that whole long, like, 5-minute sequence about, like, how meaningful, like, whatever it was I was supposed to feel about the goddamn white horse that Arya found in the middle of the battlefield. And then she rides off into the sunset, and everyone on Twitter was talking about, like, the symbolism of it, only to begin the next episode without the goddamn horse. So I was
I mean, King's Landing is a very large city. It would have taken her quite a while to walk across it.
Where did her horse go?
Maybe the horse died from the asbestos exposure.
Why did we need a long scene with her finding a horse only to have the horse gone? Like,
why did we need any of this, Gretchen? Why did any of this happen on my screen?
The horse is actually the smoke monster.
Oh, God.
The horse represents plot coherence and character coherence, which, like, exists for a moment, and then the next thing you know, it's gone, and no one's going to talk about it again.
It exists so Arya can be like, why did I come here?
Right. Also, just totally random note that I just found funny was that her face looked like had, like her face had different blood stains on it. So she clearly like washed her face and then got new blood and dust stains on her face.
After. I'm sure there's lots of blood and dust around.
Maybe the horse threw her. Maybe she fell off her horse.
Yeah, maybe. Oh my God.
So guys, it's over.
Yeah.
How dramatically satisfied are you?
On a scale of like 0 to in like if you're infuriated, that's a word.
I guess. Well, what's like a good, what's an unironic dramatic satisfaction that you experienced on this show? Like, I was very dramatically satisfied at, you know, the end of season one, for instance.
I'm dramatically satisfied by Sansa being Queen of the North because that should have happened two seasons ago.
Yes.
Like, she should have been the Queen of the North this whole time.
Yes.
She should have, like, been the queen and sent Jon on little errands. Like, that would have made sense. That would have made perfect sense.
I am dramatically satisfied by that, except for it. I find it soured by the giant sexism issue, which is that she only gets to do this once literally all of her other brothers are either dead, exiled, or literally the king of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Six Kingdoms, you mean?
I don't even think that's the main issue that I have with it. Because, like, I'll admit my little book reader heart loved seeing it. I'm totally going to just assume this is her fate as I'm reading it.
I mean, it's the only thing that happened to a character that felt earned in any way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, especially because, Julia, as you said, this character on the show, I'm not trying to conflate her with Book Sansa, should have been named queen two seasons ago. Yeah. And actually, it would have made more sense if she had sent Jon to maybe treat with Dany rather than herself.
But only a queen can speak to a queen.
And then Jon pledges their kingdom to her cause because he thinks they need their help. And that would have come into contention because she's like, well, are we still a kingdom? What's happening here?
Yeah.
Anyway, the thing I can't get away from is that this is the season where D&D wrote for Sansa to say, I'm happy. I was, how did Sandor put it? Broken and rough. Whatever that disgusting wording was. I'm so happy I experienced all this trauma and abuse because otherwise I wouldn't have grown up and become a hardened woman.
Right.
And basically like
and now a little finger wannabe.
Right. And D&D like confirmed that she's being a total little finger wannabe, like in the way that she was telling Tyrion about the true parentage of Jon. Yeah. And my issue with that is, and I think Danzy actually pointed this out in one of her reviews that just dropped. Sansa in the books, her strength is not that she learns from this abusive system and becomes callous and cold like them. It's that despite everything she goes through and despite the traumas she experiences, she remains empathetic, a bit optimistic about humanity, and she is determined that her leadership, if and when she ever gets it, will be defined by her love, not by fear.
Yeah. Right. If I'm queen, I'll make them love me.
I was super pissed that they missed the opportunity to showcase that in the crypts at Winterfell during the battle with the White Walkers. So I was like, oh, look, this is exactly like Blackwater. What a time for Sansa. If this were the books, this is where Sansa would step up and be like, right, I'm not going to be like Cersei. I'm going to, like, comfort everyone who's sitting here and be
Cersei
kind to them.
More.
Yeah, like, and she Sansa being more into the empathy and everything would have been a great counterpoint to them telling the story of Daenerys going crazy and being violent.
Yeah.
And that would have explained why they were catty with each other if they had like legitimate deep character differences like that. But alas.
Yeah, because like Sansa has to deal with all these like pissy little northern lords and she doesn't go crazy because people don't love her. Like, you know?
She's also completely isolated at the end of it. Like, I know part of that's because Bran is just king, and Arya is sailing to be Magellan for reasons, and Jon is like, I don't know, maybe king beyond the wall? Was that the implication?
Maybe.
I don't know what he's doing. He's chilling. I mean, my problem with it is, like, it is the thing that feels the most earned, and I do feel the most legitimately dramatically satisfied by it. But there's just, like, little things that make me remember, like, all the sexism surrounding it. So the fact that it happened in this season, like you said, that she had to grow from this pain. The fact that her brothers are all occupied doing other things. The fact that her crown is a dainty little tiara and not, like, the iron crown.
The iron sword crown.
A
dainty little tiara that looks suspiciously like Cersei's dainty little tiara.
I didn't get that good a look at it, but yeah.
Kind of elvish.
Like, It was definitely not the like the kind of crown the kings of winter used to wear. And it's like yeah. little things like that where it's like, right, they don't really understand this character. They still are very colored by this lens of misogyny, basically.
Yeah. But at least she thought of having a throne and like
I liked her dress though, I will say I was wondering what your thoughts were, Caroline, because I was watching that and I was like, that dress is gorgeous.
I'm definitely here for the dress. I love the weirwood tree leaves and on the inside. I am so here for it. The outside of it, like the rest of it, was like good enough to be the vessel to carry that embroidery, so I'm okay with it. And I like the color. I have red hair, and so that might be a cosplay I do in a few years. Ooh. Not immediately, because everyone's going to do it, but I love embroidery like that, and I could definitely do that. So that's something I might do down the line.
I will give them some credit here, because I did think that they did a really good job with the visual storytelling in that sequence, because you had Sansa and Arya and Jon all kind of like grabbing their weapons. And because Sansa talks about like a lady's armor is her courtesy, in the books, whether or not they intended it or not, like the juxtaposition of like Arya like grabbing her like tools for what she's going to be doing next and Jon doing the same. And then seeing Arya, like not Arya, seeing Sansa like putting on like her crown and her gown, like told the story of like, right, this is what Sansa's doing too. It's just that like her tools for the role that she's going to be occupying are different.
Right. Yeah. Like, I agree with you.
I think that was really well done.
I will also say Rama Dajwandi has been doing the heavy lifting for the show for a while. Mm-hmm. It was smart to end it on the children. That is one of his better tracks. It kind of reminded me of like, oh, remember when I watched this season finale that I liked and I thought about it? Well, even all the problems season four had, I was emotionally there for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And although I will say John snatching up Longclaw just made me be like, is he just gonna die and Longclaw's gonna like be somewhere north of the wall and no one gets that family sword anymore?
I mean, where's Heartsbane, you know?
Where is Heartsbane?
With Jorah? Not with Jorah. Yeah,
died, didn't he?
Right, but Sam gave him Heartsbane.
I just have to laugh a little bit because, like, Gretchen, with you as our guest, I guess I should have been surprised that I asked how satisfying the ending was and all four of us immediately start talking about Sansa.
Yep.
But,
no, I mean, like, it was, I think it's objectively the best part, other than Brienne.
Is there some kind of, like, implication that, like, Sansa schemed her way into this? Like, is that what we're supposed to think about it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it was framed negatively, no.
Okay. Because she also said to Jon, I'm sorry, they couldn't get... She said they couldn't get their king back after the decision was made about Jon. So obviously she didn't intend rulership. She intended him to come back and be king.
Right.
That's what I got. No, but you mentioned something
I'll be interested about the fandom discourse about this.
Yeah, Gretchen, you mentioned Brienne becoming Kingsguard. And I am with you 95% on it. But I couldn't help but feel like for this character, why would she not be part of Sansa's Queensguard?
Right? So that I was talking
the one team support. I was actually mostly thinking of her writing in the White Book, which is something that like I have been arguing is the most reasonable culmination of like her and Jaime's dynamic the whole time, is that like he's going to die. Of course he's going to die. He's probably going to kill Cersei in the books and not just like die with her like tragic lovers.
He died protecting his queen.
What a fuck you after he broke my heart and the left spin. She's way too nice, that Brienne. Too nice.
But that was the part I loved the most. Though I do agree that like it makes more sense for her to end up as part of Sansa's Queensguard. Like infinitely more sense for her to end up as part of Sansa's Queensguard than just for her to end up as Bran's Kingsguard. She has zero attachment to Bran. But like being in part of Sansa's Queensguard is what like would fulfill her oath to Kat.
Right.
And I think they honestly did it for her writing in the White Book for Jaime's character. But, like, did they forget that they wrote Larry? And their dynamic was him hitting and quitting it. And then,
Do they forget what happened last time we saw that book on screen?
Oh, God.
When it was shoved aside for some hot Laryl sex?
That's a metaphor. Consensual.
Yeah. That one was consensual.
That one was. Oh, right.
Yeah. That was I Choose You, Jamie Chu, at the end of season 4.
So, I mean, after she tells Tywin about the incest.
Yeah.
And threatens to expose her.
as much as I could see this working for the book characters of Jamie like filling in that page and it would be emotional for the show characters, it's just kind of like, this idiot was kicked out of the Kingsguard for being a fucking idiot. His last action was betraying everyone to go be with this queen that was supposed to be bad. We weren't supposed to think Cersei was a good ruler, right? She ended up being a really good ruler.
I don't know, because the story rewarded her at every point that it could. She was right. She shouldn't have gone north to fight the White Walkers.
She was
right. She's been right about literally everything the whole time. And I don't even know if they realize that they do it. I think it's by accident.
Well, they don't realize that Sansa's right most of the time, do they?
Right. Well, I think they avoid letting Sansa be right.
Yeah, the problem has always been foreign invaders. Like, that's the threat.
Right?
And you guys are right to be scared because they're going to take over the fucking world. Oh my god, we need to talk about the fucking Nazi imagery.
Oh. When I saw that in the trailer, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This is literally just like, it's what you see in the First Order in Star Wars, which is like a carbon copy of like one of the Hitler rallies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting when I was watching it, I said to myself, I was like, oh, this looks a lot like Star Wars. And then it was like a solid 45 minutes later that I was like, oh, wait a minute. This looks a lot like Nazis.
Right.
Yeah, it was just super subtle.
Yeah, well, super Star Wars subtle. Is not known for its subtlety. As the resident Jewish viewer, I guess. You know, when Nazi imagery is evoked, it's usually a shorthand that's a little on the nose and a little like, okay. In this context, when it is being evoked for the only people of color in the show that are left at this point, who, by the way, magically swelled in numbers again after the long night, and the person delivering the speech is this, like, woman who, she started out, we saw her disempowered and raped and committing herself to freeing the world of slavery, and she's now the mouthpiece, like, with the evil dragon wings of the Nazi speech about taking over the world. And it's like, what, how tone deaf can you be? Because the whole issue with this still rests on the fact, not that she ended up in this dark extreme place so much, but that you had this snap happen, and then you're trying to say her only choice was burning down everyone in King's Landing or doing nothing. And they're still treating it like this false dichotomy.
Right, because they're not actually, like, talking about what they depicted.
Right.
Like, Dany acts as it, like, she actually said, like, Cersei gave me no choice. I was like, you could have just flown to the Red Keep and burned down fucking Cersei, is what you could have done.
Ate her.
The surrender bells were ringing that have always been there.
I mean, Jon said that. He said that the battle was over, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, if
they wanted to depict her snapping at bells, which is dumb, but sure, fine, let's give them that. Like, she could have snapped by, like, immediately flying to the Red Keep and having Drogon eat Cersei. Why the F did she, like, burn down the whole city, and then in this episode have her talk like, Cersei gave me no choice? I'm like, but that's not what happened. That's literally not what happened at all.
Fun fact, the shot with her overlooking her troops is not the only Nazi imagery that is in this episode.
You mean like her Dark Lord outfit that they gave her with the high collar?
Jess actually mentioned this in her review. They kind of like riffed on Martin Niemöller's first they came for poem thing that first they came for the socialists and I did nothing. And that Tyrion tries to do something similar. He's just like, you know, first she killed the slavers and no one complained because everybody hates slavers. And then she killed those Myrinese and nobody liked them. Oh my God. That's fine. Mm. And so she's like, basically, like,
okay, so I have thoughts about this.
Jess's point was that, like, they're treating, like, these groups, like, you know, like socialists and Jews as equivalent to, like, slavers and Dr. Rocky calls them to rape her. As, like, it's like equivalent to persecute those people as it is to, like, kill for slavers in a war situation and, like, you know.
Yep.
I love it. Thanks.
Yeah. So good job, Jess. Thanks for pointing that out.
That was really
good. It made my morning.
And this whole conversation that's happening is like, one, like, what Tyrion's saying about Dany doesn't actually sound bad. Like, you're listening to it and you're like, that actually sounds kind of reasonable. Why are you trying to say that Jon should kill Dany? Yeah. Like, I mean, she's like, murdering evil people.
I guess his, like, argument is that, like, it's a slippery slope for, or like, you know, earning.
But it's not. But that's false. That's entirely false.
All of a sudden you snap because Bells, like, it's a ticking time bomb, Caroline.
The implications of this are, like, so awful because he's talking about, like, you know, she's this woman who burned all of these evil men who are trying to hurt her and do terrible things to her. And they keep on saying men. They don't say people. It's specifically men. She is a woman who is like
bad men,
killing bad men. And then you have her conversation with John where she talks about how, like, why should I make space for men who represent these old oppressive structures in my new world? And he seems to be implying that she needs to forgive the men who have betrayed her and hurt her and tried to rape her and are oppressing people. And that if she doesn't make space for people who cling to these old ways and oppressive structures, that she deserves to die and is crazy. Like, the implication is that Dany deserves to die because she doesn't want to make space for men who represent oppressive structures. And that's bullshit.
But, and they also had to basically, well, for this death to not play weirdly, we need to make Dany irredeemable. Yeah. Also, which is why they had the torching of, like,
bitches be crazy. When they don't accept the patriarchy, they go nuts.
Right, right. Well, but, I mean, here's the thing about one of the Daenerys things. It's like Tyrion's like, well, she did all these things, and somehow doing these things that were violent, but were reasonable and logical and made sense.
I mean, like, I don't want to whitewash all of her actions that much, but, like.
But I mean, they were in the context that made sense. Like,
they're definitely not worse than anything any other powerful military lord was doing in this context.
Well, I mean, definitely everything that she did that was violent was absolutely 100% framed as positive in the show. Until two episodes ago, everything she did was framed as positive. And it's like she got so overconfident in herself and in her, like, ability to judge goodness that now when she's like, she's misjudging good, and they've gotten into this weird. Because
when you think it might be justified to kill slavers, you might also think it's justified to kill burn children. An entire city. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make any sense at all.
So I have a couple thoughts on this. Number one is that Tyrion criticizing how everyone cheered for her burning the evil men is, like, such a good critique of their writing and their relationship and portrayal of violence. I'm like, okay, what a burn.
But self-burn. Those are rare.
Yeah, yeah, it's more that D&D do not... I'm going to say something that's a bit of a blanket statement, but
that's generalized literally about D&D.
Do not believe in character growth. Whenever they have given interviews about Jaime, they say he's the monster who pushed Bran out the window. Like, you are who you are.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, some, like, kind of Rubicon crossing there, too. Yeah. Like, that's why they did what they did to Dany, because she can't come back from it, just like Jamie could never come back from.
But in a story, though, where you're trying to have arcs, that sort of undermines the entire ability to have arcs, right? Like, if you just define someone by their worst action forever.
But, like, Sansa improved.
Well, because she needed to, because they didn't like her character.
Yeah. She wasn't hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's more just that, because they always said Arya was always there, you know, she was always badass. Yeah. She just needs
I just kind of randomly thought of Shay and how, like, one of her last lines was, don't you remember? I'm a whore.
Oh my God. Yeah. So I really do think they just remembered Barristan going, sometimes you should answer injustice with mercy. And she goes, I will answer injustice with justice.
It's one of my favorite lines because I use that gif all the time.
It's actually a good line, but we're not supposed to agree with her. We never
justice,
were.
Justice, you shall do justice.
Because I think D&D always were sympathetic to the not all slavers argument.
Yeah.
I mean, in a meta way, is that surprising?
It's like, what, Kylie? Are you saying that the people who wanted to be showrunners on a show about slavery never being beaten would be sympathetic to the hashtag not all slavers.
They have a super weird relationship to how they depict slavery also, because now Danny has a no prisoners policy because of chains, and chains equals slavery because they literally don't know the difference between a system of slavery and manacles. Yeah. Like, that is how they write this fucking show.
She put Varys in manacles.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But he was quickly roasted, so, you know, it was temporary, right?
And, I mean, can I, like, just, like, to get down to some, like, nitty-gritty details in terms of the deaths in King's Landing. They're like, oh, my God. Oh, the people she killed. First of all, a good majority of that city was still standing. I mean, there was, like, you know, tastefully placed rubble around. But a lot of the buildings.
I don't know. There were like no people. Like, there was that one guy kind of like walking through the street.
A million residents of King's Landing in the show. A million. She did not kill a million people. What did she go? Street by street in a grid fashion and ask everyone to stand outside? Like, she did not.
She was strafing.
She killed a lot of people. But I mean, even like the upper half of the Red Keep, the upper portion wasn't crumbled. And the dungeons were also mostly together because only that one little place where Cheryl and Larry were standing had the bricks fall down. So it's like this whole like, you destroyed everything. It's like, this is what happens in war. Small folk die. And yes, Cheryl was using them against her. And like that was
everyone else's defense. In this case, they really didn't have to.
No, they really didn't have to kill. Like, Danny was very clearly being rational and destroying only the defensive, like only the military structures.
And then the bells rang.
Then she heard bells and went cray cray.
I mean, like, this is our problem. Like, we can't see this as a problem with Danny because we're seeing this as a problem with the writers because we can't think of these characters in any way. Like,
I don't know if it's just that I'm like a very staunch Targaryen supporter or what, but it's like, I was like not particularly offended by this. Like, it's like, okay, people die in war. Like, a lot of characters in this story have done a lot of really violent things in this fantasy universe where these fake people are dying. So,
no, what I'm offended by is that they instantly created these false dichotomies. Basically, Dany's not allowed to kill people unless it's a situation where Tyrion says it's okay for her to kill people.
Basically, yeah.
And she cannot wage war unless he's cool with it 100%. She is allowed to take Casterly Rock because that's a good thing to do and so super necessary,
but like,
to their plans.
Even loot train attack, which I think he condoned, right?
No, he was worried about that. No, because she was like stopping around going, enough with the clever plan.
That was the first time he sadly walked through the war area and had like an open mouth. I thought he condoned that.
Because didn't John suggest it or something?
John was like, if you bring dragons to King's Landing, it will be more of the same. Don't do more of the same. So she just burnt soldiers, which is like, fine.
Can we talk about the fact that if Dany had not followed Tyrion's advice, none of this would have happened? Like, if Tyrion
if she just like arrived at Dragonstone and then said, okay, let's go to King's Landing tomorrow, guys, pack a lunch.
Which is what she'd wanted to do. And she was like, I'll just attack the Red Keep and kill Cheryl. And Tyrion was like, no, innocent people might die. It's like, no, dude, if she had rejected.
Didn't they say that Minimaid would pay off? That never happened.
If she had just rejected Tyrion's advice and attacked the Red Keep the way she wanted to, then none of this would have happened.
Yeah. Tyrion is just the worst.
But he gets to be Hand of the King.
Yeah.
Why does Tyrion suddenly, last season and this season, is like so concerned about the small folk? Like, where did this guy come from?
He's so good. Varys he's is better than all of us.
Because he's just the goodest. Yeah. Is it just because he's the goodest guy in the
BFFs
room?
He's BFFs with Varys now.
This is why we're calling him Saint Tyrion. Yeah. Like, literally,
just all of a sudden, he's like, it's very important that the people of King's Landing, and we care about the people. It's like, I think I was saying this last week on the podcast. It's like, that was Daenerys' shtick until Tyrion entered the room, and then it became Tyrion's
until
shticks.
He came in, and then it had to be him telling her, no, don't be so violent.
Because I think the theme of the entire series is Tyrion is the gift.
Everything
in the plot, every character, every situation bends to Tyrion Lannister being the bestest, most wonderful thing we've ever had. He is the gift.
We had so much dialogue this episode. Like, one of my friends and I have been joking about how, like, this whole season, you could probably make a 10-minute video that is entirely just, like, someone talking to Jon Snow and Jon looking like he's about to say something and then just turning and walking away. Because he says absolutely nothing. There's little dialogue in any episode. Mm-hmm. Like,
she's my queen.
This whole season, the dialogue has been so minimal. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly Tyrion gets to, like, pontificate for 10 minutes in the finale.
Okay, like, he got to, like, they brought him in chains to this meeting of important people.
Oh my god.
Like, which planning I think was to supposed to be some kind of trial situation. And then he, like, completely takes over and starts making political speeches and being a kingmaker.
Right.
Yep. I want to talk about that in 1 second. But before we move on from Dany, like, her death, we got to talk about her getting stabbed.
Yeah.
And, like, first of all, John needed convincing. He didn't see any sort of moral imperative after watching this. Is it just because he didn't understand Dothraki, so he didn't know what she was saying to her troops?
Was she speaking Dothraki or Valyrian? Does anyone know?
She spoke both, I thought.
She was speaking Dothraki, too, when she...
I thought she first addressed the Dothraki and then addressed the Unsullied.
Yeah, I wasn't paying that close attention, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I was
either
just,
way,
like live blogging about Nazi imagery, I think.
When he talked to Tyrion, he was like, well, the war's over now. And Tyrion's like, what?
Wait, can we also just note that Daenerys, when she's listing the places they're going to conquer, she first says, from Winterfell to Dorne.
She also says the Summer Isles. She's going to liberate the Summer Isles from
well,
what?
There's a lot of slavery in the Summer Isles. Cause, you know,
what?
No, I thought that's where they capture people for slavery. And then they bring out the Slaver's Bay.
Oh, you mean she's like a protection situation, kind of like Grey Worm Promise.
But there should be no more of that because there's no more slavery in Slaver's Bay because now it's Dragon's Bay or whatever the fuck it is.
Oh, right. Poor Dario. I wonder how
What are the political ramifications in Slaver's Bay with Daenerys' death? That's what I want to know. That's a spinoff I want. I want to know how Dario's keeping that together.
I just want to know what Tyrion's line, you loved her more successfully than Aemon did, because my first reaction when I heard that was like, because Jon got to fuck her?
That's what it meant.
Yeah, that's exactly what that means.
That's exactly what it meant.
Tyrion is in love with her, and she was never interested in that.
So that
way.
Wasn't like,
and
a
that's
honey
what
pot.
Successful means. Successful means you got to fuck her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or you got her affection, I guess.
What do we think of Dany being stabbed? I mean, it's comical that like stabbing is a plot based effectiveness on this show.
Well, he stabbed her in the heart, because I also had that complaint.
No,
but...
she wasn't stabbed in the heart, though.
That's what it looked like.
I watched where that knife went in. Yara said she got stabbed in the heart, but that is not where your heart is.
I thought that it... So the thing about...
Everybody knows the heart is in the leg.
Her heart was... Like, she was stabbed below where her sternum ends. Like, he literally stabbed right below her sternum.
I thought he stabbed up, which would nick your heart.
Maybe.
I
don't know. I
had a homicide case where somebody got stabbed in the heart, so I know too much about stabbing in the heart. When you stab someone in the heart, you really only have to stab, like, a little bit of their heart to really fuck it up. Because then, like, the heart beats, and once it starts beating, it starts tearing. It's, like, all a mess. And it's the kind of stab that does kill you, like, pretty much right away. So that's what it looked like to me, but I mean, I didn't go back.
I think
to
that's what
it
was supposed
close.
To be. But
I think it was meant to be that way. It's just when she's laying on the ground,
maybe it's not quite
like,
in the right
like
spot.
The dagger in her, the dagger was like straight up and down, right below her sternum, and then Yara was anyway. They just weren't paying attention.
Hota getting stabbed was way worse.
Yeah,
like, not even a question.
That knife would have never even reached his heart. It was so dinky.
It was in his fucking shoulder, and he's like the size of a refrigerator, and he just falls right over. But no, I mean, the one thing about this stabbing was Drogon coming in, seeing the pointy object sticking out of Dany, and then thinking, I must burn this other pointy object because that killed my mommy.
I mean, like, if they had, like, if this were to happen in the books, I can guarantee you 100%, like, she would have been killed by the throne somehow. But they couldn't do that because of their stupid throne design. So...
yeah, and... Drogon missed the Iron Throne when he first went to burn it?
I thought that was weird, too. I was like, why is he burning the hole around the Iron Throne?
I mean, if they had any kind of, like, care for actually what would happen here, Drogon would have come in and killed Jon.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's it's like,
but Jon is fireproof, so that's why he could stand.
Jon's
like,
not fireproof
from...
because he burned his hand in season one.
No, but he's a Targ, Caroline. So
but he's not.
He's
but
fireproof.
We know he's not Blood of the Dragon in the books too, because he burns his hand. So
yeah,
he's not
but
fireproof.
But he's a Targ, Caroline.
Targs
so...
aren't fireproof.
Yes, they are. Of course,
Blood
they
the
are.
Show. Can this be our transition to talk about Jon and why like Jon being why RLJ is. Like, is meaningless on this show.
Yeah, didn't Jon have a magical destiny?
No, apparently not.
First of all, just backing up for a second, Jon is a Targaryen and a Stark, obviously. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
Dany finds out she's not the last Targaryen. And it does fuck nothing other than be a fuel to break them up so that she's more inclined to burn people down.
Yep.
That's what R plus L equals J is.
Yeah, it's the easiest solution. Get married to each other.
Yep. But come on, Caroline. She's far too much of a naggy person but this to do goes that exactly, and you totally just be henpecked.
This goes to just what Gretchen was saying. It's like if she's not giving in to the patriarchy, you know, if she can't get married to him because he can't control her, she must be crazy. Oh my God, the implications just get worse.
Yep. Yep. I'm saying it's sexism. The only point that RLJ serves is for Danny to go crazy. Like, that is the only point it serves on the show. If you actually break down what it does, the only thing it does to the plot is create dissension between Danny and John so that Danny can go crazy. That's literally all that does. And that's the only, up until Bran was crowned king of Westeros, the only point of Bran existing and becoming the three-eyed raven was for him to exposit about RLJ, which was to make Danny crazy.
Oh my God.
I'm just like thinking like how you could actually have this story, like even with like these like kind of inverse patriarchal implications, like people inverse saying, oh, Dany is crazy because she's not accepting the patriarchy. But like, because we've had absolutely no internality from Dany for quite some time now, there's like no chance of this being a critique.
No, there's not. Right.
No,
definitely. Yeah. So no. Just like, I know, I think I'm just trying to head off that argument because, like...
Yep.
Yeah, I know, I agree with you.
Depiction is not endorsement. And, like, you know, we were talking a couple episodes ago about, like, how, like, Rhaenyra 2.0 versus Aerys 2.0. And, like, Rhaenyra was totally fucked over by the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And, like, she probably, like, had some screws loose by the end just because of all the, like, you know, shit she had to deal with. And she was also not a nice person to begin with anyway. Mm-hmm. So, like... But, like... In that story, you don't feel like the story is telling you, oh, Rhaenyra is just a crazy bitch.
Right.
No.
You know?
Exactly.
But this story does feel like that. And like,
I mean, some people have that takeaway still.
I'm going to say something about Daenerys in this is that the scene when she was walking in to the Iron Throne and the music was like on point for that, I thought that was very well done. I was confused if that was ash or snow. Was it snowing in King's Landing?
It was snow, yeah, because...
What the fuck? I mean, at first I thought it was ash because that would make sense, but yeah, then it was clear there was some kind of blizzard going on.
No, Drogon was like rolling around in it.
Oh, that's right. That makes no fucking sense.
Dragons might roll around in ash, that might be
But then it was magically gone during Tyrion's trial and like every other shot after.
Yeah, he was like in just short sleeves and he seemed perfectly comfortable.
I think 6 weeks had passed is what's official.
I thought he said 2 weeks, but whatever.
So
his
Tyrion
was longer than two.
Tyrion was in jail for 2 weeks. Who was in charge? Why was he not immediately released?
Grey Worm was in charge.
Okay. Why?
Because he had the spears.
Okay.
Yeah, it just says past few weeks is the only canonical thing we've had. Yeah. I want to... okay. I, there's so many directions we could go in.
Have we discussed John enough?
Yeah.
John. John stabbing Danny. Could the guy have been a more passive character this entire season? He fucking rode a dragon and that felt like it was something done to him. Like, how?
Yeah, that was just like such a... Like, that must be a checklist. Because
I don't think anything else is a checklist. So people today at work were asking me like, oh, do you think this is how it's going to end? And I'm like, I cannot see. And like, there are broad strokes here I can see, but I can see
something kind of like, I think that when we read the end of Danny's arc, we might be like, oh, that's where they got it from. But
I cannot see Bran becoming the elected king of the six kingdoms. I cannot see that
occurring.
That's
tough for me. You know, they called it the seven kingdoms even when there wasn't seven kingdoms, like when Dorne wasn't part of the seven kingdoms.
Because isn't it like the seven, like the gods? I always thought that it was kind of
And like the Riverlands is conveniently not a kingdom. Neither are the Crownlands. Mm-hmm. But like, you can make them if you want, I guess.
Yeah.
Because like the Riverlands were part of the Iron Islands at the time of the conquest. And, like, the Crown Lands were just, like, gobbled off, like, you know, like, Ottawa style or something.
I will say, I think Jon, well, I'm a big fan of the Jon Coldhands theory, that, like, John is going to end up basically the equivalent of Cold Hands, like, wandering the frozen north in some kind of, like, penance, probably, or, like, self-sacrificial, he feels like this is his penance for the things that were necessary to save the Dawn or whatever. So, like, even though the show didn't really follow through those implications, because I was watching the final scene and being like, I don't know what I'm supposed to know that John is doing, because there's no fucking dialogue. Tell me what he's doing. He's just, like, wandering away from the wall after, like, finding Ghost.
Yeah.
But, so I mean, that's
a perfect segue, but we're not done talking about John, so just keep going.
Right. I do think that that is probably what's going to happen. But when you look back on the whole series and think about John, and especially think about John in the books, and you just, like, Prince that was promised meant nothing.
Yeah.
Azor Ahai reborn, like, Azor Ahai reborn meant nothing. RLJ.
Wasn't that Arya?
Like, RLJ pretty much meant nothing. Like, other than, like, being fodder for, like, political infighting and Dany going crazy, RLJ was meaningless. Right. Like, why does it fucking matter that Rhaegar and Lyanna got married and had Jon? Nothing!
Robert's rebellion was built on a lie.
Like, and the lie was that RLJ is important.
Like, yeah. So this is the checklist that people have been saying to me, people that have, like, some book knowledge, too. Is there, like, oh, Jon stabbing Daenerys means he's going to stab her to forge Lightbringer. She's his Nissa. Sorry, and I have always hated that, because I hate. And I think that it would be really antithetical to a lot of messages and themes that George R. R. Martin is going for. My feeling about a lot of the prophecies is that these are not, like, Hand of God prophecies. They're, in my mind, they're all kind of like the Red Comet in book two, where, like, there's just a fucking comet, and literally everyone else is like, it means this, it's for Lannisters, it's for the dragons, it's for this, and it's literally just a fucking comet. Like, it doesn't mean anything. It's that people impart meaning onto things, because that's what we do. So
Oedipus.
Yeah, that's how I've always sort of seen the prophecy. So I would hate if it was one of those, like, to kill.
Yeah, I mean, like, so far, all the prophecies have done in the story is, like, prompt Targs to do things.
Right.
Right.
Like, forcing their 11-year-old daughters to get married and stuff like that.
I will say, though, like, while we're speaking of John's magical destiny, I don't see a single reason why he was actually dead.
Why did he have to die?
Yeah.
Why could have been, like, a...
So Tyrion could ask him.
This is why the idea of them having this ending planned for several years just confuses me, because I really don't think that even them are... I mean, they are that incompetent.
Like, nothing that happens to John... Like, nothing that happens to John that in the books has implications for his magical destiny matters at all on the show.
No, like, he was brought back to life, and then he warned everyone about the Dead Army, and then he gave the Dead Army a dragon with his stupid white mission, and then they fought them off in, like, a night, so...
And Arya did an Air Jordan and stabbed... jumped 12 feet in the air and stabbed the Night King, because D&D thought it was cool. Like, that is literally the game. No, seriously.
Like, they foisted John's magical destiny out the window after 7 seasons of build-up because they thought it was too obvious and wouldn't it be cool if Maisie Williams did a stunt.
I do say, like, John's character on the show having a magical destiny isn't exactly exciting because this character is a sack of potatoes.
Yeah. I love potatoes, though.
He has no characteristic. They kind of hand wave about he's super honorable and he doesn't tell a lie. Oh, was it meaningful that he pretended to be into Dany's plan to stab her? Is that meaningful?
But what? Like, even this season, the whole thing about how, like, everyone was talking about, like, fans were talking about, like, oh, right, like, he's probably going to be the king because people keep saying that he should be king. And he's like, no, I don't want it. Which the plot point they gave to Bran in the end. But like if you summarize Jon Snow, like, the point of Jon Snow is to kill Dany.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why Jon exists on this show. If you look back in retrospect, the only reason that he exists is to kill Dany, because he doesn't do anything else.
This isn't a soap opera, like, things have been building to this,
I guess,
for 8 years.
So I have a question that sort of is most applicable to Jon and Dany's stories. I'm all here for subverting expectations, right? That's a lot of what A Song of Ice and Fire does. And that's a lot of what makes the story different and unique from a lot of fantasy. Yeah,
I'm starting to think that's not the right term for what A Song of Ice and Fire does. Like, it does
subvert expectations, but it very specifically subverts expectations based on, like,
genre.
Genre.
Yeah.
Genre.
Right. So I guess my question is, why is are these subverted expectations in the show not satisfactory?
Because they're not subverted expectations, they're random happenings.
The only expectation we have is that a narrative has a reason to exist.
Like a subverted expectation is that, like, you think you have this villain who's who's like a horrible misogynistic asshole for an entire book, and you think seeing her get her commitments would be satisfying for you, and then you actually see it and it's horrifying and you feel sick. That's a subverted expectation.
Mm-hmm. Right, a perversion of wish fulfillment is one example of a subverted expectation. This isn't actually these are not expectations based on like the idea that
John, who is this, like, you know, fair-haired child, like, figuratively speaking, who's like, you know, this, like, you know, Padme-esque political prodigy who gets elected by this, like, hard group of people at 16, and he's going to be a great leader, but, oh, they hate him and they stab him. That's a subverted expectation.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece on this. Just because something happens you didn't expect, it doesn't mean it was subverted. It just means you were surprised.
Right. So I think that's kind of the crux of the issue here, because that's what they're going for, right? They want to be shocking. Ever since the Red Wedding, they want to be shocking. Yes. But they seem to be totally misunderstanding why the Red Wedding was shocking.
Right. Yeah.
Well, like, they kind of really helped the Red Wedding being shocking by omitting all the foreshadowing and, like, the atmospheric elements.
Right. and that's the other part of it, is when people say, like, oh, it's a shocking twist for Dany to go dark. I'm like, right, because there's no foreshadowing. She spent 7 seasons, like, actually trying to argue Dany for why. Very
concerned about her last season.
No, but even then, she was still, like, on the side of, like, I want to rule Westeros because, like, there are people who are oppressed. Mm-hmm. Like, going from wanting to break the wheel to, like, I'm going to burn all of my goddamn citizens because bells rang. Yeah, she just,
like,
kind of
reframed it as, like, Caroline stupid. Said. I'm not sure if that was before we were recording and you said that, like, she freed them for the mortal coil.
That was me. I made that joke.
That was Gretchen. Oh,
I'm sorry, Gretchen.
That's okay.
I give you credit for your joke.
No, but there's also a difference between, oh, she's always had a little bit of ruthlessness in her, which she has,
right?
To like her Hermione actions Granger are now, too. Right, like, her actions literally aren't motivated now. Cersei fucking surrendered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't unring those bells, D&D.
And it doesn't make sense to attack your citizens. Like, attacking or civilians or and your capital city doesn't make any sense. Or
destroy the castle that your family built.
Mm-hmm. Right. It makes zero sense.
She was making it personal.
And there was no justification given on screen. No dialogue. Mm-hmm. No, like, traumatic flashback. Like, zero justification other than Emilia Clarke's face muscles moved.
Yeah. It wasn't about her.
And she did do Nothing a really good job. Her. She really did do a good job acting. Like, Emilia Clarke did an amazing job she, acting. Yeah, she, like, pulled an Olenna. But
I suddenly like her.
Mm-hmm. Right, but it's inane because there's no content to it.
Like, and it wasn't about her. It was about the men having to deal with her. Right, like, she became the last obstacle for them.
Right.
That's all it is. Also,
speaking of Tyrion.
Yeah. If we want to talk through Tyrion, I mean, this relates, because if I have to hear about the fucking wheel that's
oh my god, how many times they say that this episode? Time?
I mean, the wheel doesn't make any more sense now than it did in season 5. No,
why wasn't this episode named The Wheel? Why was it even named The Iron Throne?
But you know what? You know what the best way to break the wheel of a series of white men is to elect another white dude, but just one who can't have babies.
Her commentary on the wheel, if I may dive back to the season 5 trailer line, it was not so much about white men. Her point was Starks, Lannisters, Baratheons, they all spin this wheel and, like, play their games and the small folk get crushed underneath it. Fair, right? High lords don't have the interest of their subjects. Dany, you know, the freer of slaves and the advocate of people who have been disempowered would care about that. It's a dumb line, but that's what she was saying. And it's especially a dumb line because then she's like, now give me the throne because I am the last Targaryen.
Yeah.
What? But what happens is that they decide, okay, hereditary monarchy is the wheel, but monarchy's all right. Yeah. Especially if we select monarch.
To be fair about the wheel thing, like, I'm trying here. like, there was a kind of, like, school of political thought for a while, like, about absolute monarchy, which is basically that, like, it builds a direct relationship between subjects and the monarch, like, kind of unmediated by corrupt petty nobles.
Uh-huh.
So, like, if you twist it enough and you happen to have, a degree in Western European history, then maybe you could appreciate it.
No, because the show makes me want to defend hereditary monarchy somehow. What they ended up doing is saying, instead of one family ruling and the inheritance is through the sons of kings, because sons of kings can be dicks, which, yeah, fair. Mm. What we're going to do is have this arbitrary council of arbitrary lords. And
who are hereditary.
Right.
Who are hereditary lords. And, like, chosen... Why was Davos on the council? I still can't get past that.
I mean, he is a lord. He does have some land in the Stormlands.
They will select the king. And this is, and it's actually, let's have a king that purposely cannot have children, ignoring the ableism of that assumption for one second. Because the sons of kings are so bad, so it's actually good that inheritance will be ambiguous and we'll have to keep promoting someone with a council of these hereditary lords again. Which, to your point, Julia, is maybe the more politically corrupt system.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, the historical example that this most resents is Poland-Lithuania, where the elected monarchy really fucked them over in the end and basically made Poland-Lithuania, like, the stupid little bargaining chip amongst, like, all of the other powers in Europe. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah,
like, I'm not saying it would have made sense if they're like, well, we're going to establish a democracy and let's draw up articles of a constitution. Like, I don't think that would have made more sense. I'm not trying to say this should have ended with democracy.
I mean, because the question is, why is this breaking the wheel?
Right.
It's not. It's
because they made up breaking the wheel.
I mean, the reason why it's breaking the wheel, like, actually, Caroline, to answer your question, is because Tyrion is in charge now, and Tyrion is the hero we all deserve.
Yes.
Wait, but Tyrion could have said anything. So I guess the question is, why do D&D think that we as an audience will buy this as breaking the wheel? And I guess it's because
Tyrion
we
is
live
in charge now, and that's the only good option that could have existed. As long as Tyrion is in charge, this is great.
Well, I mean, I think Tyrion could have... Tyrion just needed a warm body to be king, right? Like, he could have picked really any of those people in front of him, and it would have been great because he picked them. But why the voting thing? And I think the voting thing is because they're two Western men writing for a Western audience, and we value democracy. So if they stick it in the show in the way that makes no fucking sense, then we're going to think, oh, this is great because somehow democracy innately is
better. I mean, a bunch of nobles choosing the king does kind of make sense. I mean, it's happened in Westeros.
But this isn't democracy by any
stretch
of the imagination.
Yeah, that's not
no,
democracy.
It's like feudal
they laughed at democracy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what I think happened is that they wrote themselves into a fucking corner with the break the wheel thing, and then they didn't have motivation for Dany to be doing anything she was doing because they don't think about anything, so they just tossed out the break the wheel line a lot.
But, like, I kind of feel like they only made Bran king because they had no idea what else to do with him.
I think they had no idea who to make king. They had no other good option. With the
but
penis.
It's a really shitty option. Davos has feelings. The last person you want to put in charge of an entire like continent is someone who has zero emotions and zero empathy and doesn't understand human beings. This is how you get tyrants. Because he literally does not feel, he's emotionless.
Oh my god, is
and
he
lost his humanity.
Yeah, he's one of those, like, sci-fi stories about societies run by the computer.
Wait, right. guys, is
you
he the opposite?
You don't put the AI in charge.
Is he a surveillance state, technically?
No, wait,
oh my god.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
Is he the opposite of Daenerys? He's a man, he's got no feelings, he's got no empathy, he's got no attachment to the people.
He has no ambition.
Yeah, he doesn't fuck.
He's the opposite of Daenerys.
Right.
I keep talking myself into a logic loop with this because when I first read about this happening, my thought was, this has to be the checklist effect. This has to be from
the
books.
That's what it felt like to me, too.
D&D don't like this character, right? Yeah. They don't care about this character. They didn't put him in a season, so they obviously couldn't have thought he was that important. But then the Iron Throne gets melted down, but then there's still a king of the seven kingdoms or the six kingdoms. I'm sorry. But like, why did this just end with all the kingdoms being separate again?
I mean, the North being independent kind of like as a checklist suggests that like they didn't have the other kingdoms do that because they just don't give a fuck and neither does the audience.
Mm-hmm. Is this actually the end arrangement?
No, like, I don't. I mean, like, we're two books off. Like, try to predict the end of A Dance with Dragons, like, at the end of A Clash of Kings. Like, just, you can't do it, so.
No,
I feel like there's some minor foreshadowing. You have Bran ruling in place of Robb in Winterfell that could potentially foreshadow it. If Bran somehow, like, he's seated on a Weirwood throne currently, and so Weirwood Throne to Iron Throne, like there's some very small things. So I feel like it could be that Martin like builds up to King Bran. Right now it feels way out of nowhere, but I feel like there is a possibility for King Bran to make sense potentially.
I mean, like, he has two books. There's a possibility for like literally anything.
I don't know.
And I don't think that Bran is going to be like I don't think he's going to be Bran bot in the books. Like he's going to have more emotions.
Yeah, of course not.
I think that he's probably not going to complete his Green Seer training, because that seems to be like a whole theme with all of the Stark children, is that they're being groomed for these professions that they end up aborting to return to their Stark identity. But also, sure. The other thing I want to say is, can we talk about how fucking ableist calling him Bran the Broken is? And how, over and over again. And remember,
so many other options.
Like, remember at the end of A Clash of Kings when Bran's like, I'm not broken, and how important that is for his character arc, but they don't just fucking care. And they're like, we'll call him Bran the Broken, ha ha, because he's in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. My guess is that.
Fuck off.
It's something, my guess is that someone calls him that in the books, like later on, I'm saying.
Yeah.
And because they're D&D, they just adapted it at face value. Like, I guess this is his nickname now.
Yeah, I mean, like, Bran. Kings don't usually get those, like, kind of epithets, like, until after they're dead.
They probably just got it from Crippled Bastards and Broken Things.
Like, no, I think Bran the Broken is in the books.
Yeah, he calls himself that,
He calls himself that, but then he says, I'm not broken.
But you can't change in this show. There is no such thing as character progression, like we were saying earlier.
Right.
Like, he's always going to be the broken boy from episode 2.
I guess what I'm saying, like, obviously, if there is a King Bran in the books, it's not going to be because he has the best story. I realize that. But there's just so much wonkiness in how this council of elitists electing the king was marketed as this wonderfully socially just ending. And also, Sansa's going to declare secession from her brother.
It makes no sense. So I'm sorry, King Bran. We can't join you because the Northmen are tired and have fought a lot. And
I mean, like, it does. It makes sense that, like, it's politically impossible for the North to politically, like, to submit to King's Landing again. Like, that kind of, like, that idea.
When a Stark is on the throne.
Yeah. Yeah. But, that's the rub.
Why would they not be, like, thrilled that one of their dudes is literally the king?
Maybe they realize that actually Tyrion's in charge?
Well, because Starks, I mean, you're not supposed to go south. I actually feel like if we're going on book logic, this would be seen as a betrayal. Because Starks don't go to the south. If you're a Stark, you stay in the North.
But then Bran was also saying, I'm not really Bran Stark anymore. So, like, that's what he was saying all season.
I think.
Remember when Tyrion was like, why aren't you Lord of the Winterfell?
Did they call him Brandon or Bran?
But, like,
not Bran.
The Northmen, like, don't, even in the, like, in the books, the Northmen don't give a fuck about the South. They don't care about the South. If they had a Stark on the throne, they wouldn't care. Like, they care about independence. They care about nationalism.
There was a Stark.
They don't care if a Stark is on the throne.
Yeah, there was a Stark in Fire and Blood who, like, literally marches down to King's Landing and takes over and is, like, regent for the king. And he leaves as soon as he possibly can.
Right. Yeah, they don't care.
Like, he could have made himself king and he's just like, nope, I'm going north again.
Because the Northmen helped for the battle for King's Landing. I mean, they were, like, intimately involved in taking down the Lannisters. Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, I could see that angle. That certainly is not the angle I saw on this television show.
No, I think that I'm Arya arguing for Northern independence is checklist effect, and it makes sense in the books that she would argue for Northern independence. I think on the show they gave some really weird, like, hollow reasons for that, but I don't think that Bran being king would in any way affect whether or not the Northerners want independence from the Iron Throne.
Speaking of the North, like somebody made this comment somewhere about how like the Northern troops were just as involved in all the looting and breathing as mm-hmm. all the Dothraki and Unsullied yeah. were last yeah. episode, and no, like that doesn't seem to be addressed at all.
Well, no, it's only those crazy brown people, foreign invaders, that do all the horrible yeah. things.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just John's such a shit leader; he can't actually get anyone to listen to him.
Probably.
I'm also really confused with this council arrangement of why Grey Worm had so much political sway.
I don't know.
No, because he was in charge of all the people with swords. It's not that complicated.
Right. You know, that actually makes more sense. He's got, it's military power. He has the military power.
I think the actual question is like how his like character changes in every scene as like
yep.
how ruthless / merciful he is.
Honestly, though, why was John alive?
Exactly.
Agreed.
That's a good question.
Who figured out that John did it? Like, that was the part
I'm sure he told them.
He can't tell a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the part that's like, wait a minute. Yeah, wait, I have a better question. How do they know she's dead? Drogon flew away with her body.
I'm sure John confessed. He's very honest.
And they just believed him?
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
yeah,
he's an honorable man.
He chopped down the cherry tree. What do you want?
He's an honorable man. He doesn't lie.
I just like I have a lot of questions. I mean, my big question with Grey Worm is why he went from "Shut up, Tyrion, you can't speak here" to "Ah, yes, I'm listening intently to what
right.
you're saying."
I
how
mean,
you are suggesting
like,
a new form of government.
In order to be made a saint, you have to have at least 3 acknowledged miracles. And this like ability to just like turn conversations onto himself and take over is which is one of the miracles. Mm-hmm.
It is definitely a very special power that Tyrion has.
Yeah.
I just like that until Tyrion suggested it, no one had considered we might need a new king. How can we possibly pick? Did they just assume Jon was going to be that king because of his claim? Like, I don't even...
Does everybody know about his claim? Or
what about Gendry? Gendry's sitting right there, and he's now
yeah.
been naturalized, legitimized, and he... And he's the actual heir to the actual last legitimate king.
Unless you don't think Robert was legitimate in the first place.
Yeah, like, I don't think Dany was ever considering Robert's rule legitimate.
Yeah.
Right?
I bet, like, who cares about Dany? All these elitists
here.
Well,
sure. But Sansa marched her fucking northern troops
yeah.
all the way down there.
Her invisible northern troops, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah, but
we're here to protect Jon. We're gonna fight for Jon. We're gonna sack the city again for Jon.
But there were so many. Can we talk about Tyrion? You guys want to talk about Tyrion for a bit?
Yeah, I want to talk
no.
about Tyrion. Like, I want to talk about. I mean, there's not much more to say. I mean, like, I just want to point out that the last piece of dialogue in the entire series was him reprising his story about the time he took a donkey and a honeycomb into a brothel.
A honeycomb and a jackal? I don't...
I was wondering if that was, like,
donkey
yeah,
something.
Jackass and a honeycomb. I mean, the last actual words spoken were Queen of the North.
Okay.
Yeah, but the last bit of dialogue
but, yeah,
was
the last
the
dialogue
honeycomb.
Was that.
I mean...
You just love
that
to
whole
school
fucking scene was so dumb.
So dumb.
I hated that scene. But it started with chair moving, and I have to say, I immediately thought of you guys, Kylie and Julia, with the, like, chair moving, because there's, like, those small council scenes that they've shown before, where it's just like, why are they moving chairs? And I had that same thought, where I was like, why are we getting 30 seconds of Tyrion adjusting chairs? Why?
Before we move on from Bran completely, like, can we address the fact that apparently he knew this would happen the whole time?
Why do you think I'm here?
I don't know why you're here.
Does this mean in the books that Bloodraven is playing a really long con and trying to get on the Iron Throne through Bran?
I mean, he is one of those crazy bastards of Aegon the Fourth. Who knows what
yeah.
they would do?
I mean, in my opinion, in the books, I think Julia, I think you're of this opinion too. I don't think Bran's leaving the tree. I think Bran's in the
yeah,
tree.
Yeah, I mean, like, at this point, like, that is where I think... Like, as the story sits now, feels the most natural to me. But, like, there's still 2 books. Anything can happen.
Yeah, but, like, that's
so,
where he belongs.
Maybe, like, 3 chapters into the Winds of Winter, that will not feel like the natural thing anymore. Who knows?
I don't think he's staying in a tree. I will put my vote for leaving the cage.
I do, too. So we're 50-50.
Is it even worth mentioning that Tyrion picked Bran because Bran has the best story?
I mean, I think we can trust the internet to do our work for us here.
Poor Mira fucking Reed.
I mean, it was just so stupid, because, like, I mean, so I get what they were going for, right? They were trying to do this meta, like, you know, what brings people together? Stories bring people together. And, like, looks directly at the camera, you know?
Yeah, basically.
And, like, that's fine and everything, but literally the next logical thing to say is, and who knows all of our stories? Only Brandon Stark.
Oh my god! Why did they do
that? That's what I thought they were gonna do. And like, who has the best story? And I'm like, literally none of you. Like, what do you?
I had the same thought, Caroline. But also, why? I still think that's a bad reason to make someone king.
Yeah,
of course it is.
Like, that's the person that you make, like, your master of lore, or you make a really good advisor. Like, you don't put the person who has zero human emotions and just knows all of the past in charge of your goddamn country. Like, you don't make a librarian king.
Yeah, I mean, like, in Tyrion's defense, he's making himself king here because Bran isn't going to do anything.
Right.
He just kind of vaguely smiles and then goes off with Pod.
Because Tyrion gets to have what he wanted at the very, like, always wanted at the very beginning, which was to be in charge.
Yeah, to be in charge and to be recognized for his brilliance.
And recognized for it.
Right, the whole series is about making Tyrion. It's like, we said this some seasons ago.
It's all about making, like, it's basically, this whole series is A Song of Ice and Fire as written by Tyrion Lannister.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is funny because that book called A Song of Ice and Fire that apparently doesn't have him in there, even though everybody thinks he killed King Joffrey, he was acting hand for several months. He, fought in several battles.
I kind of wondered.
He orchestrated the defenses. He killed Tywin Lannister.
I thought that was kind of meta, though, because, like, I would agree that Tyrion Lannister in the show is not in the A Song of Ice and Fire series because they're two different characters entirely. So
that's a different level of meta-ness there.
I can't believe Maester Slughorn fucking named his thesis A Song of Ice and
Fire.
He's
a very bad researcher if he didn't mention Tyrion Lannister.
Wasn't he the guy that was, like, skeptical about the Army of the Dead?
Yeah.
So did he even incorporate that? Or is this just literally a song about wars and he named it A Song of Ice and Fire?
And, like, can you really call, like, anything that's happened since, like, I don't know. Like, by a feast for crows, the wars of the Five Kings are over.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the history he was supposed to be writing. So, like, is he writing a history of, like, these wars or those wars that were, like, the first four seasons?
Literally, and how is Tyrion not in it when he was accused of murder for regicide? Isn't that what everyone assumes happens to Joffrey at this point?
I mean, even over in Braavos,
I guess maybe it's public
knowledge,
like, it was on Weisstrophy Twitter that Olenna actually killed him. I don't know.
No, Caroline's right. Like, he was still in the Braavosi play. He's obviously registering on people's radars.
Yeah.
There was a couple great lines throughout the episode involving Tyrion, and I wrote little notes, but not direct quotes. But if you guys remember when Tyrion's talking to Jon, there's some mention that Tyrion is not his father?
Tywin?
That Tywin is not his father?
Yeah, that Tyrion is not Tywin Lannister. Like, they aren't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, in the show, maybe not, but, like, in the
book, the entire point
of Tyrion's character is that he is Tywin Lannister. They're the same character.
Right.
That's the whole thing about how, like, the daughters, I mean, and I mentioned this, I think, before we started the episode, of one of the things that frustrated me about that conversation was that you have Jon and Tyrion talking about how, like, their, like, you know, daughters can't escape becoming their evil, cruel, wicked, nasty fathers, but you have these two sons sitting around, or grandsons, like, sitting around talking about how being the reasonable ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Cersei became Tywin and went crazy and was the Mad Queen, and Tyrion got, you know, he didn't become his father, and Dany became Aerys 2.0, whereas Jon, like, grandson Jon, didn't become his father. But that was the whole thing. Was
the,
like,
only
Tyrion
problem with that is they thought Tywin was awesome.
Yeah.
So is
that,
it,
like,
does
Tyrion
it,
isn't Tywin.
Does it count as a book reference if it's the literal opposite and antithetical to the books entirely? So, like, saying Tyrion...
Sure, why not? I want to win bingo today.
Saying Tyrion isn't Tywin Lannister is, like, the opposite of the entire point.
Yep. Yep.
Like, they missed it so hard they went inverse. Like, this,
right,
yes. Yeah. That's how bad it is.
Right, because that's the tragic irony of Tyrion and Cersei, is that they're both embodiments of Tywin Lannister,
right.
and each of them thinks that they're, you know,
they don't realize it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they hate each other.
I mean, like, Cersei thinks she's so much better than her father.
Right.
They will only know him as Queen Cersei's
father. Although I do have to say, I kind of loved John being like, she's not her dad, in the episode after she had carpet bombed the city. Like,
yep.
What?
Yeah. Her dad never actually managed to do that, so.
I guess maybe that's what he planned meant. It.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's more effective than her dad at mass murder.
Yep.
Oh my god. Okay, we have a few more arcs left to close out if we feel okay moving on from Tyrion. I mean, I always feel okay.
Yes, Tyrion. Absolutely.
Is it even worth mentioning the Unsullied are all going to die now with the butterflies?
Nath apparently has the, like, Nath, that's not what I said.
Nath.
Yeah, anyway, so Nath has is famous for its butterflies, but these butterflies have this, like, virus or something that gives you a leprosy-like disease, and only the natives are immune from it. Ooh. And like they think it's like a mystical thing that protects them from like slavery and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so
they're active during the day, so like slavers will come at night and stuff.
Yeah, there's no butterflies during the day.
The Unsullied will just hang out at night.
Yeah, and they'll like stay on their ships.
But he kind of. When I read the leaks, it was like, oh, they're going off so that they can free everyone just like Danny had wanted to do. But it wasn't even that clear. It just kind of seems like this is their retirement and he wants to sip a pina colada on the beach or something.
Right.
I mean, he deserves it.
Yeah. But he just wants to go to Noth because that's what Missandei wanted to do. That's what it felt like to me.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Which is fine, really.
I never thought my opinion of Mistworm was going to go down as a ship, but... Yeah, I have regrets now. Then she just was murdered to spur action.
She was. And it sucks. She was pretty much fridged.
I hate it. Arya Magellan.
I mean, like, I think that this is another example of they had no idea what the fuck to do with her. So they're like, oh, didn't she say, like, offhand 2 seasons ago or even 3 seasons ago? I don't even remember.
That it was season 6.
Yeah, so that she has this vague curiosity of what's west of Westeros. Let's
but
go
But why
with
did
that.
She say that then?
It's the Westeros.
Right there. Isn't there, like, a...
she wants to visit the Westeros.
It's a Westeros for the rest of us.
Yes.
Isn't there a family, like, Ironborn family of some kind that's like the islands are very far west and they're like super weird. They show up to the king's moot and they're like, everyone's like, whoa, these dudes are super weird.
Yeah, what are they called?
Their
island is like a week sail from the rest of the Iron Islands and they're like super weird and they possibly have sex with seals.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Lonely Light?
Yeah, they're Lonely from Lonely Light, but I forget the
from
family's
where?
Name. Lonely Light.
Was it? It's Lonely Light, yeah.
I mean, I doubt that D&D have read Fire and Blood, but she felt like Alyssa Farman to me.
Yeah, it was very Alyssa Farman, without the lesbianism.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think Alyssa Farman is awesome, and I really want an Alyssa Farman story. I want to know all of her adventures, and that she probably made it to Ashai and might be Quaive, maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah,
but anyway, that's actually a very different story that's significantly better than the one we got.
I mean, like, I like just like you know, this might even be a checklist too. That
I think it's a
like
checklist.
Like almost like you said about John and like the like kind of wandering penitent thing. Mm-hmm. Like I can see something like that happening with Arya too.
Right. Mm-hmm. They just didn't really set it up because they you know made her inhuman in season 7 and then she was like over her trauma in this season. And then is now like, oh, I feel like wandering around the world. Like in the books, I feel like there's going to be a bit more of a melancholy. In the same thing with John. Like John going back to the wall is like, cool, this is where he spent all of every season of the show and probably seems happy here.
And like, Gretchen, you know more about this than we do. What's your opinion? Do you think like the other's threat will be decisively forever curtailed?
I think so.
Or will it be like the previous Long Night?
I think it's going to be, I think we're going to get a total reset of the seasons and of magic. And I think that they go together. And I think that the White Walkers will be destroyed. And I think that there aren't going to be any dragons left.
Hmm. Is Arya going to do it?
No.
She's so into the more myths. I mean, I guess she's still a warg, unlike anything, but...
My thinking is that the humans are going to be cut off from the weirwoods.
Hmm.
that like Bran, like my thinking is that Bran is going to probably somehow find a way to basically end the Green Seers.
The golden path.
And like there aren't going to be any Green Seers. Humans aren't going to have access to magic anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Magic will still exist. I just don't think humans are going to have access to it.
Yeah, they haven't had much access to it.
For the past humans or just like people in Westeros? Like we're talking about, you think humans like the entire world, like Planetos or just in Westeros?
I don't know that we'll get that distinction definitively.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that like the Green Seer line is going to end, that mm-hmm. that Bran is going to be the last Green Seer, and that he's going to
called him the last Green Seer, haven't they?
Yeah, they have, yeah.
That he's going to end the human connection to the Weirwoods, and that ice and fire are going to cancel each other out, and there'll be like a reset back to balance.
God, these books are so much better than the show.
Resolved by shoving some obsidian into someone's heart.
Well, not obsidian, it's Valyrian steel. That was Lightbringer. Lightbringer's a dagger. Lightbringer is a cat's paw dagger.
No, I meant because the White Walkers were created with obsidian daggers being shoved into a human heart. Benjen Coldhands was saved with obsidian dagger being shoved into his heart. It's
the whites could be killed with an obsidian dagger.
It's so useful. It's like the most useful substance.
More useful than Dragonfire, apparently, because the Night King can survive full blast Dragonfire, but gets killed by a tiny little Valyrian steel dagger.
Oh, God.
Because the dagger was forged with Dragonfire. I mean, like, I forget sometimes
that the Night King is not a thing that actually exists in the books, because it's so, dominant in the show.
Yeah.
I think it's probably related to Euron in the books, actually. Nice. Night King.
Yeah?
Yeah. That, like, I think that the show took Book Euron and split him into Show Euron and Night King somehow. Or that Show
Euron... What the fuck is Show
Euron? Show Euron is a lot more like Victarion, but I think in the books, what like, a lot of what we see that belongs to Night King on the show, like, having Viserion, the Ice Dragon, like, a lot of that stuff is probably going to be Euron.
I have no idea what's going on with that character.
He's trying to become a god. He's trying to become a god, and he's opened himself up to basically potentially be possessed by a malignant force that may be lurking in the Weirwoods. And I think that there is a malignant force in the Weirwoods.
Yeah, well, for sure, there's definitely a malignant force in the Weirwoods.
And it's gonna, and it would not surprise me if it possesses Euron.
Oh my god, remember the spooky vision in A Dance with Dragons with the Weirwood tree going back in time and Bran seeing that human sacrifice?
Yeah.
Oh my god, imagine a visual adaptation.
Oh my god, I wish there was a visual adaptation of the series.
I know, right? I know. And that, just think of, the creepy visions from T-Wow. I'm getting shivers
just thinking about it.
Like, creepy visions of, Euron having, Cthulhu face and, the bodies of the gods impaled upon the weird, the Iron Throne. That'd be so fucking cool to see in a visual adaptation. I really wish we had one.
Yeah. In terms of Arya as an explorer...
right, let's get back to what this is actually about.
That one!
My thought about this is that if she were to be Magellan in the books, it would be because she had nowhere else to go.
Yes.
Because Arya does think a lot about home, and the fact that she stays, for example.
And she still has that bond with Nymeria.
Yeah.
People always forget about
that. She stays at the House of Black and White because she has nowhere, there really is nowhere else for her to go. If she's in a situation where her sister is ruling Winterfell, I don't see why Book Arya would be like, okay, YOLO, peace. I'll see ya. Maybe never.
Yeah, this didn't feel right to me at all. I actually have a theory that she dies in the books.
That wouldn't surprise me.
No, but George R. Martin's wife would be very upset.
Yeah, she has to survive to the last book because he promised his wife she would survive to the last book.
She'll survive to the last book, yeah, but I think she's going to die before the series ends.
Right.
I mean, literally anything could happen in the series. There's two books left. Just think of everything that happened between A Clash of Kings and the end of A Dance with Dragons.
Yeah.
That's two books.
I'm just saying, if we're taking this ending as a checklist at all, I think her sailing off to the west to be Magellan is more like they wrote whatever the fuck ending they wanted for her.
I could see that.
It just doesn't...
I could see Arya feeling like she has no home because she's beyond saving. That, she's gone too far and crossed too many lines and killed too many people.
Yeah, the penitent wanderer,
Right, the penitent wanderer, just like John. I could see John and Arya.
Happy Victoria Day, by the way.
Yeah, happy Victoria Day. I could see John and Arya in the books.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, it's Victoria Day. Fireworks. There's fireworks. Everybody loves Queen Victoria.
But I could see Arya and John have very similar endings in the books. Though John's, I think, would be a lot more about penance for specific... I don't know. I think that there would be a difference in tone, but I could see Arya feeling like she has no home, even if she had a place, but feeling like she doesn't have a place because of the things she's done.
Is it a little weird, though, that the ending note would then be the wolf pack is scattering and it's all lone wolves?
I think that... Well, but it's going to be after winter, though.
Hmm.
Like, they're going to band together. I could see them banding together in winter and then scattering once, you know, winter is done. Or when, you know, looking towards winter being done. Because it's a dream
of spring. And, yeah, like, okay. I could see, like, if Sansa was in this situation in the books, like, she would have built her own pack by now, you know?
Right. I also love that it was snowing in King's Landing on the throne in this episode. Like, the White Walkers had zero effect on the weather. Right?
I mean, if it was winter, it's winter. Like, I don't
know. Winter just comes and goes as it fucking pleases in the show.
Yeah, and then it was like a dream of spring with the little leaf poking out 6 weeks later or something. Like, shortest fucking winter ever.
Right. Just kind of like the long night. It was a very short night.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think...
Speaking of not knowing what the fuck to do with a character at the end, Sam...
Can I just say one final thing about Arya to summarize is that I think the difference, if this is checklist, I think the difference is one of tone. That, like, D&D decided that, like, Arya wandering around penitent and sad is, like, not the badass ending that a character that, like, Arya deserves, and so they gave her a triumphant one.
It's not even tone, it's motivation. Like, she literally just randomly said to Lady Crane while on opiates, I think I want to see what's west of Westeros. And we're like, why?
Foreshadowing.
Where is this coming from?
Foreshadowing.
I guess.
Anyway, Sam.
Yes.
Yes, Sam. I mean, there's not much to say about this. It's just kind of
he's
dumb.
A maester? Yeah. Are they giving discount degrees
grand
now?
Maester.
Oh, God.
When did he finish his degree?
He didn't need to.
When did he get around his two oaths of celibacy?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Maybe they cancel each other out. two so oaths, like, of celibacy make a not oath of celibacy.
So I guess the Night's Watch was disbanded after the long night, forgive me, and then reformed because they realized they really needed this penal colony.
It's Australia. It's really cold Australia. That's what the wall is now.
Because there's always a place for broken men or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand the wall's function, too. Isn't that just, like, really rude to the wildlings who help them?
There's a big fucking hole in it, so it's not like it matters anymore.
It doesn't seem like they're not going to dismantle the wall. That's a lot of work, but they're not going to, like, maintain it either, I guess.
But it also has a giant fucking hole in it because Viserion broke the wall.
What do the Night's Watch Rangers, or, like, what do they train for at this point? The people who go there, like, what are they doing?
Maybe they knit all the socks that they don't knit.
They provide the socks to everyone in Westeros.
I would love to see an image of just, like, a whole bunch of black brothers running.
They're
going to
start a textile industry up in the north. That's going to be their job.
But, yeah, so Sam is a maester who also can't have kids as a maester. Poor Gilly and their possible son named John.
I mean, like, I guess now that he's Grand Maester, he can just, like, change all the rules. I mean, didn't Dany say that she's totally just going to change all the rules?
Maybe that's his breaking the wheel. Citadel? That's how Sam breaks the wheel.
Maybe Bran saw that Sam needs to be his Grand Maester, so he just gave him a chain, because that's what happens when you appoint.
Well, why did anyone in the Small Council have the jobs that they had? Davos is the only one that made sense.
Yeah.
My boy.
Are you saying Bronn as Master of Coin to feel
Why
earned?
Do you put a fucking sellsword in charge of money?
Yeah, they had to bribe him extravagantly, and it's funny that, like, he still thinks that he has a debt that he's owed from the crown. Ha 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 ha. But, like, I remember the scene in season 2 where Tyrion literally had to explain to him that accounting exists, and when you have debts, you have to pay them back. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why? What happens?
Bronn didn't get to react to Jaime's death.
Oh.
Nope.
That's so sad.
That's a work for the fanfic authors. Go,
did they,
children,
did they
go.
Put Jaime back with Cersei just to know homo that? Also, I am honestly gutted about Like, I would have been so here for it had Carol and Larry, like, escaped and gone off to Pentos. I would 100% be here for it. Yeah,
evil sex worker.
Yeah. They'd raise elephants together.
The Grey Worm would
join them. She really wanted those goddamn elephants. Like, she really wanted them.
I'm here for the elephants, Gretchen. I am still so here for the elephants.
I am, too.
I'm here for Harry Strickland. He was the most useful character in the show today.
Why did they even give him a name? When we were watching, like, the episode where he died, like, last episode, I was watching with my friend, and, like, they show him dying, and I was like, does anyone in the audience actually know who this Mook is? Like, does anyone know this guy? Like, did they ever even name him?
About, like, on screen? She called him Captain Strickland, I think.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, she did.
But, like, the whole thing about, like, this build-up that Cersei had of, and it was, like, totally a threat to Dany now, was just such a beer fart. Like, yep. She literally took care of it all in 5 minutes. It was
her being pregnant meant nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
No, it didn't mean nothing. It made us extra sad when she died because idealized motherhood.
Oh my god.
Also, then she got to say the wonderful "a dynasty for us."
They don't know what a dynasty is. It's hilarious. They like think of like dynasty that soap from the '80s.
So Bran has a dynasty for himself.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's the dynasty of Bran.
Oh,
the dynasty of Bran.
Everyone has a dynasty for themselves.
He's the Bran dynasty.
You have a dynasty. And you
this
have
is
a
great system of governance.
Yes.
Okay, so do we have any unanswered questions or should we just play bingo?
I want to play bingo first and then we can talk anything lingering after that. And by bingo, we mean Carol, the good queen Carol, who is back and died. And she died as she lived in the books, you know, hugging Jaime and Tyrion, crying over her corpse.
Yeah.
That felt right to me.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to win bingo today, but okay. That's
if only there was a reason for Tyrion to be kind of angry at his brother and have mixed feelings about his brother's death.
Gosh.
Man, if that were the case.
There was no eunuch joke, because Varys is dead. Nope. Was there a conversation?
Like, I mean,
both the Tyrion and Jon conversation and the Dany and Jon conversation could be considered a conversation.
Yeah.
The council meeting was kind of a conversation.
It was a good right. They were just like yelling things.
Yeah.
I remember when Edmure stood up to be like, "I'm going to be king," and Sansa's like, "Sit down, uncle."
What was that point of that? Was it supposed to be funny?
I don't know.
Did he want to be king? I thought he just wanted to make a speech.
I think he was trying to like prepare a speech for him being king. Like he was going to say
he was.
He was.
He absolutely was.
Okay.
I want to see where it was going, too. But no, it's funny because remember that time characters used to be annoyed with him. It's like the same reason that Mace singing is automatically supposed to be funny. I mean, that was hilarious, but for a different reason.
Maegor the Third,
Oh, God. Did Arya smirk during the council meeting?
Yeah.
She tried to kill somebody, too.
Yeah, so two women are antagonistic. Remember Arya was like, "I'm going to cut your throat,
Oh, God.
Yeah, okay, so that's pretty tame by Game of Thrones standards, but yeah, okay, let's go for it.
All right, poor
Cheryl. Well, she was dead.
Yeah, and
she's dead, and Carol, so same for O'Larry.
Yeah.
Although, is it a final O'Larry moment that he could have moved over?
I think it definitely is. I would like to point out just about their death scene, like, they're, like, in, like, this, like, little pile of rubble or whatever, but, like, all the archways that are supporting that ceiling were in like perfectly intact.
So were their bodies.
Yeah.
Right. So like
I had that thought too.
Like where did those bricks come from?
I don't know.
From floor map.
Oh man, we're gonna get a Carol on this, but okay, I'll keep going. Forced John and Dany romantic moment. I don't think that counts.
Well, John forced it to trick her.
Yeah.
I think
that counts.
This is definitely not how I meant.
I don't know that your intention matters. I think it our interpretation of it
definitely
matters.
The author.
I mean, it was quite literally forced. He made out with her so that he could stick a knife in her.
Exactly, and it was a use of force during it as well. I think this satisfies every definition of forced.
I don't feel comfortable checking off with that definition.
I didn't feel comfortable watching that scene, so I think that also counts.
Okay, did her hair move? Wait.
I don't think there was any context for that. No.
Her hair did not move at all.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, was there a season one or two callback?
I can't remember. I feel like they wanted a season one callback with Jon's final scene.
It was a season two callback when Daenerys was going towards the throne.
Oh, I was kidding. The whole thing was a big callback because, like, Sansa is shutting up Edmure. Oh, right. Season two callback. John even said, "Love is the death of duty," and Tyrion was like, "Did you come up with that?" Because obviously, John can't say anything remotely coherent. Oh, on the show. God.
He just kind of stares.
Everything was a callback. Absolutely everything. Story. There was no Ned story, Ned though.
Rising. Nope.
Man, he didn't. That one really was a bust this year. I'm so sad. No more slow clapping.
Someone is mean to Tyrion. They locked him up for somewhere between 2 and 6 weeks. They locked him up. Yeah. And Grey Worm was mean to him. Yes. They were definitely mean to him.
Yep.
Book reference?
Again, my question of it being the opposite of the books, like the exact opposite, I think might count.
I mean, they named the thing A Song of Ice and Fire. True.
Yeah.
That's definitely
a very literal book reference. Here is a literal book called A Song of Ice and Fire.
I could see everything on the screen.
Yeah, I don't think that was ever an issue.
Though, actually, at one point, my mom walked in while I was watching because I'm out visiting my parents in Phoenix. And it was the scene in the jail cell with Tyrion was sitting in the dark on one side. And she walked in and looked at the screen. And she literally, the only thing my mom said was, "Wow, that's really dark."
Okay. Then so I think we should get it. I think we should get it.
Gretchen's mom, thanks.
Thanks, Mom.
There's no sex in this episode?
Yeah,
No.
Except for the makeup.
Unless we count the walking sex that was Robin Arryn. Oh my God.
Did he grow like 2 feet since the last time?
I think people are saying that he never long bottomed.
He did.
He did. Yeah. That's what, yeah. I feel a little gross because he's probably still a very young actor, but like, that was a nice surprise.
Long bottomed. I love that that's a verb.
Yeah. I mean, it's 100% what happened. Although
Gendry was also looking particularly nice at the council scene.
Yeah, he was. Caroline, the tunic that Robin was wearing had the little boob cutouts that his mom used to use.
I didn't notice that. Oh my God. Did not see that. Like, oh God.
He had. Hold on. Let me. I'm gonna link it because it's this important to what I'm talking about right now. Because he had a tunic underneath, so it wasn't like he was naked under there. If not for his boob cutouts, but like it was 100% basically her tunic, just him here. I'm posting the picture.
I mean, maybe that's feminist of him.
There.
Hold on. Let me look at it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He looks like just like he knows how hot he is.
Yeah, look at that face. Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
But like the boob cutouts are an actual thing.
Does, yeah.
Maybe that's feminist of him though. Maybe he's just supportive. Like that's like a unisex style the veil.
Oh my God. All right. Did it copy Lord of the Rings at any point, except for the multiple endings?
Yeah, I like needed to pee. It really reminded me of Return of the King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole. Even. Sansa's crown kind of reminded me of Aragorn's a little bit, which I guess is weird because Aragorn's was like.
I was thinking it reminded me of Galadriel's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It had that kind of elven, like, Celtic. Oh, because
it
was like.
Yeah, it did. It definitely did. I agree with that.
All right. No one listens to Sansa.
Everyone listens to Sansa.
What? Remember when she mentioned the line of succession and everyone was like, whatever?
I mean, Edmure listened to her, they made her queen.
I don't know, she did say, like, what about the line of succession? They're like, instead of that, we're going to make an entirely new form of government.
Also, Bran doesn't want to rule. He has no interest in governance.
But that was the reason why Jon was supposed to be such a good ruler.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this is what makes men good rulers, is that they don't want to be in charge.
I think same this counts. She brought up the one major flaw of the system of governance. And that's why she was like, I can't take part of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we get that space.
All right, Bran's robot
voice.
Yes. Yep.
Why do you think I'm here?
Did Royce wear a breastplate to the meeting?
So, yes. I don't think he did.
What?
No, he did.
I don't think he was wearing the breastplate in the council scene. Because I wrote in my notes, yay, breastplate, and then I later wrote, no breastplate.
What?
I feel like he was wearing one.
I didn't notice. I didn't even notice he was there.
Hold on. We have to look this up for the integrity of Carol. I can't believe this is actually an
the
episode.
Judges are checking.
He's just wearing a very puffy turtleneck.
So no breastplate?
No, but I think the guy next to him here. You get the boob armor, no breastplate, and then the guy next to him wearing like battle clothes. This is the weirdest.
Oh, yeah, who is that guy on the right?
I don't know.
Who are you, mystery man?
He looks northern.
He does have a sigil on his thingy. Yeah, he does look northern.
How many votes did the North get? No wonder Bran's
right. He's got the shoulder fur, which is a northern thing. So he's got the
IKEA rug on his shoulders.
I can't tell that Royce is not wearing a breastplate though, because he's wearing
a very barrel chested gentleman.
I don't think he's wearing one.
He's not wearing a breastplate. He's not.
But why is he wearing 85 turtlenecks? I'm so confused.
Because maybe
there are like ripples in the fabric, so he's clearly not. That's not a breastplate.
Yeah. It kind of looks like the ghost coat that Danny wore.
It does.
Okay. All right. No, we're not getting a bingo. Sorry. I'm so mad. Our one solid check mark of slow walk across the screen.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Like 90% of the episode was a slow walk across the screen.
Was Davos focusing?
Yes. He didn't know why he got to participate.
Didn't he go up to the Unsullied and he was like, easy, easy. Like, there were horses that he was calming.
He is just the greatest thing. And I gotta say, in this episode, my favorite character and my favorite prop appeared, and they were both prominent, and I'm very happy about it.
Which is your favorite prop?
Floor map.
Oh, floor map. Yep. I'm so happy that Davos survived. Floor map isn't really a prop.
Floor map is a character.
Floor map is repaired to its glory. Also, Davos corrected grammar in his final scene. Character growth.
He's like Stannis now.
Whose grammar did he correct?
No, Bronn.
Yeah, he corrected Bronn.
Oh, you're right, you're right.
And he calls him the master of grammar.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny, gross. Guys? Are you laughing?
No.
I'm still thinking about Robin's boob armor.
boob window.
Euron's dead, so he couldn't mention anything. All the whites are gone, haha.
Oh, is that really?
Gendry was looking hot.
He was.
Yes, he was.
Subtitles. Yeah. Did anyone say the Iron Throne?
I think so. I don't know for sure.
Who is the more dangerous than the rightful heir to the Iron Throne?
Okay.
Yeah.
I also think it would have counted anyway because the episode is called The Iron Throne, and I feel like that counts.
No. It has to be the inverse episode title spoken aloud.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So someone saying it. And that pretty much has always happened here. Yeah. So.
All right.
Except the Long Night. See. I don't think that was spoken out loud.
I think we got the middle row.
No.
Why not?
Nope. We didn't get anything. Caroline.
Damn it.
Silly us. We thought that the whites might still be in the end. And Royce took his fucking breastplate off. He ruined it. We would have had the last Carol.
Well...
Goddamn, Royce.
All right. Well, we're gonna have a lot more stuff to say.
I mean,
about...
I can't wait for what we will discover in the retrospective series.
I'm gonna tell you, the theme is sexism, and Tyrion is the gift.
I mean, I have to write my sexism essay. Like, how?
But it's so easy. This is like sexism 101. Like, what, Julia, right? You were saying, like, it's like two men fighting over the body of a woman. It's like the easiest analysis.
But it's like, this happens multiple times in multiple ways. Maybe I'll revisit the tropes of season 5 and see how well those have held up. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, season 5, it was a lot more subtle.
Was it?
Miranda?
The Slapsies game?
It was more subtle than this.
The Slapsies game.
I mean, like, it was definitely more subtle in King's Landing in season 5.
You are a greedy bitch, you know that? Well, no, that was season 6, I'm sorry. They called each other sluts in season 5.
But before we go, we have to take a shot, because the season's over.
Wait, Caroline has to do a plug before we take
a shot. Oh, my shameless plug. So UBS fans, I am going to the convention Otakon this year, as I go every year. It's in Washington, D.C. It's the summer in July. If anyone is there, I will be there. I will be dressed as a weirwood tree, as I have been in the past. Some of you have started to follow my Tumblr, which is foolish of you because I very rarely use my Tumblr. but I will post some pictures of the costume, so if anybody... I don't know, if we have any fans that go and want to see me, I will be stumbling around there Friday and Saturday dressed as a tree. And I'll probably go to the Game of Thrones photo shoot, which I'm sure there will be several of this year. I'm also submitting some art to the art auction that are little Game of Thrones clay figurine doodads. So come and look at them and consider purchasing them. but then don't because they're probably going to be overpriced because it's a convention. So that's my plug.
That's no.
Okay.
Please don't buy my products. Thank you.
Don't look at them and think about it and then save
buy Caroline's products, guys.
All right, let's celebrate the season being over.
Yeah. Well, so what are you drinking?
Shots. I have tequila.
I have wine.
I also have tequila.
I also have tequila.
Caroline, I don't drink tequila. Yeah. I don't drink wine.
You weirdo.
Okay. I've been drinking a margarita this whole time.
I've never heard of shots
too.
Of wine. Okay.
Are you ready?
All right.
No. Wait. A toast.
A toast.
To the king. The finest stories.
Oh, kill me. This is awful.
All right. And down the hatchet. Right. Let's go.
Oh, I'm so glad. Ooh. I had that lemon.
Wow.
Oh.
Just to give you, I want to give you guys a visual. I'm drinking my wine through a curly straw from a pineapple cup.
That's amazing, Caroline.
Well, my shot glass is from Carnaval de Quebec, and there's Bonhomme just winking at me.
Mine looks like a tiny little brandy snifter, like literally looks like a scaled down brandy snifter.
Aww.
That just holds a shot glass, and it's adorable.
That is really cute.
All right. Well, a big thanks to Gretchen for joining us. We are huge fans of Gretchen. If you haven't already listened to our A Song of Ice and Fire episode about patriarchy brain,
woo-hoo!
I think
do
it's
it.
One of
just
our
like
best
Caroline's
topics.
Mother.
It is exactly. Like my mother.
And Gretchen, we will almost definitely have you back, if not to talk about this show in the context of like what you think is going to happen in the books, like other book mythology things, probably.
Yes,
because Julia and I are not very strong at that.
Yeah. So. I'm very like, let's see what happens when it comes to mythology.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about that.
I'm like, let's hypothesize about Ariane's sex life. And then Caroline will most certainly be back if, for nothing else, we have some Carol Awards we're going to have to give out for season 8.
And
I think for
the
series.
Carol of Carols.
Yeah, the Carol of Carols.
So,
Caroling.
Many, so many good awards.
Are we going to have a Carol of the Bells?
Oh my god.
Need to work that into something. Oh,
I mean,
my
can
god.
We wait until December to do the Carol of Carols and call it the Carol of the Bells?
Oh,
yes.
We can't wait until December.
Is this
the
a
carols?
Pitch? Yes, it is.
Is this a pitch?
And then, of course, Julie and I will still be writing analyses. We'll be doing a retrospective series for this
season. We have
a
couple of fun ideas for the next month or so.
We might even do character specific retrospectives. Hey, remember Marge?
Oh my god.
What?
Oh
who?
My god.
It's so weird how that made more sense than all of this.
Remember the burrito dress?
Never forget.
Good day.
I love the burrito dress.
No, I told you guys this is my theory the other day. It was that bells destroy all powerful women. There's the bells for Daenerys. There's the bells, the shame bell for Cersei. And there's the bell dress for Marge. The burrito dress was based on the bell dress for Bjork.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, so Sansa's necklace is actually so she can puncture any bells that come her way. And that's
I'm not sure you
did you guys
bells,
see like the Liberty Bell? Like they had a literal literally
in the episode.
In the episode there's a bell and it looked like the actual Liberty Bell. And
they're like, we need to have it cracked, and then they cracked it in the same spot.
I was wondering if it was like an intentional to be like, it's like Liberty dying. Look how meaningful it is, guys.
Thunderous applause? Did it die with thunderous applause?
I mean, kind of. The Unsullied kept like bashing their spears into the ground.
Oh my god. I bet you anything that they thought that.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they did.
That's the kind of bullshit.
You know, guys, the end takeaway, women in power that don't listen to the men are really scary, and fuck those foreign invaders. Am I right?
Yep.
Up top.
You so right.
Hashtag women on top.
Hashtag women on top.
I'm sorry, the tequila's really hitting me. Thank you, listeners, so much for putting up with us all season, or if you're just joining us for the first time, welcome to your new life of snobbery. It is only going to get saltier from here. If you want a show that is satisfying from start to finish, minus one subplot in season one that I promise gets better, watch Black Sails.
Yes.
It's a pirate show. Everyone likes swashbuckling
pirates. Yeah, if you want satisfying character arcs, watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Also watch Legend of Korra, because I demand it.
If you just want to feel good about humanity, watch Dairy Girls.
If you're evil and you're on the run, watch Steven Universe.
If you want actual funny jokes that aren't about, like, dicks and stuff, watch Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, there's just so many other shows.
If you want to be spooked but still not satisfied with the story, watch Chambers on Netflix.
And just hope and hope that they don't fuck up his Dark Materials. The end.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And on that note, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.
People, armies, gold, flags, stories. There's nothing in the world more powerful than a good story. Nothing can stop it. No enemy can defeat it. And who has a better story than Bran the Broken?
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.